that many Jews over there.
Yes.
And that Gatorade with orange stuff in it, horrible. Or do you like it?
I like it better in the lot. Wouldn't know where to start.
Too much to talk about.
Too much to talk about. That note of Faye hit me for a loop.
Well, Miss Daisy, this thing that happened this morning, we were talking about out there.
Yeah, you all let her get away from you.
I don't know. Even when you were pushing her, she didn't seem like she could talk about Francis personally. But it's like Mr. Weaver can't talk about people, or doesn't. It just, that's not in him. Or something else might be.
Yeah. He talks about most of those skills of the countryside.
Yeah.
Well.
You could pump him and I could pump him, but he still wouldn't come up with people.
I just hold it open. I've sort of abandoned that idea of pressing them. I just hold it open. I guess it is a little pressure.
It looked like it to me. I mean, she didn't feel it. I don't think it's pressure, but, you know, you just kept pushing her. But when you hold it open, it seems like you're going to get a lot of things that maybe you don't want to get, or you didn't plan on getting in the first place.
Well, that's all you... I mean, you don't want a director. But on that first part, Faye, so you're taking it to me now.
Well, I was waiting on her.
Yeah.
That first part... Well, I know. It just seems like you get tongue-tied, Faye, when you're in here by yourself, just like I do. Like on Mr. Weaver the other day. Now, when I'm over at his house, he and I can go on, you know, for hours at times.
Yeah.
And no trouble at all.
But are you looking for something, or are you just letting him talk?
Well,
I think
when I was over Mr. Weaver the first time, I was looking for the hunt. Well, no, I wasn't. I was looking for the village talk that you mentioned. And I didn't get it.
No.
I got the singing. Well, I was happy with that because... Right then, I just, you know, so happy about getting anything.
Yeah.
That was fine.
And it was sustained.
Yeah, it was sustained. And I tried it for a while to try to get over to, say, somebody he knew, like Woodard Coleman, or, you know, work through the farming in the Woodard, because he knows Woodard. And he didn't pick it up. He went back to the dog. And Miss Guthrie... You said be mean, or she's best when she's mean, so I was looking for things that would, you know, just kind of set her off. And I guess I probably don't, you know, do as much, I know I don't do as much as you do in directing them, because I just kind of go along once they get started. And if things run down, well, I try to pick up something else, or, you know, like that doctor business, you know, the doctor's couldn't get one on Saturday nowadays, and she can take that for a while. But
she's had more law trouble than anyone would think out there in that out there in the woods.
Yeah.
Well, I knew about that. That's why I was looking for Mrs. Tull. Told the judge that the law. I ended up giving her a wild, a dead pony. And I got it, I guess, when she started talking about that, the lawsuit with her niece and nephew, Mr. Guthers. But you stick me in front of that tape recorder and I can't do it.
You had the whole morning over there, and you knew that if you didn't get it here, you'd get it later. You know, with Miss Mary. You know, you were leisurely.
Yeah.
I mean, if it got off the track, you could 30 minutes later, you could get it back on, maybe.
I mean, yeah, that's the way I feel when I'm over with them. That if something doesn't work off right then, you know, I just go back to it during lunch or something. It's easy to get back on them.
Yeah. And then you don't have to worry about the tape.
Yeah. I don't have to worry about all the little, you know, grocery store talk that comes in between things a lot of times. Some of our talk is just like two women talking, two wives, you know, they talk about their husband. It's not good talk particularly, and you could hear it at any bridge party, but in a few minutes you'll get on to something that is worth hearing.
Well, I try more and more not to direct it, but you don't want chatter.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But there's over there, there's some chatter in between things. Just
For one thing, all of them, Miss Daisy is bad as any of them. They'll talk about infirmities just indefinitely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Mr. Weir will. But I mean, I know enough now. You can get them off that pretty quick. Just, you know.
Yeah, you can just cut right by it.
And they don't resent it being cut off
like
wood down in cocoa or something.
So in a way, it's directing, and in a way, it's picking up what they say. Now you see, I didn't direct this on Bear Taylor because I didn't know it was there. But whenever she brought it up to him now, not eating, I knew I didn't want that. I mean, there was no obvious matter. I wanted him in the prime. I put it in the prime, and she brought it back up. So somehow you've got to get it back to the prime.
Well, all you do when you do that is just, well, like Mr. Weaver, I don't want to hear about it now. I want to hear about when it's back then, and they go back to it.
But Guy's genius is he doesn't say, I don't want to hear now. I want to hear back then. And you see, this is a thing you can't explain. It's either you've got that sensitivity to it and that direction, because you see, he lived with this thing last night. He worked at it. He thought about it. He put his mind to it. I put mine a little bit.
Unless you got it in you, you see, you can't adjust to them.
Right.
I can't come out from the hay or working with the cattle on a just coal and adjust to it. I can't do that with Cookie.
And you can call it direction if you want to, or not direction. But it's you know what to leave out as well as what to put in. And it's those little, like, I can look back now and think about 100 things I could have picked up in that verse, in the bushes and everything else. See, I can't do it. I'll admit I can't do it. I don't know that I ever could, but you can.
Suzanne can do it on paper. She could pick up any of those things and put it into Francis Presley. I see you've been working a week or so, just little bits here and there with a point that no one knows about these people.
Right.
Unless she tells about them. And then you let her get off on for so long on that useless trip. She'd come in there and ask me. Well, I wasn't directing on Cannonball.
Well, I would have stayed on. I mean, I would have let her go on with that, thinking that, well, in a minute she'll hit something that you can change the direction. I mean, it just. But. I'm sitting there looking at the tape recorder. I can't do it. At least not right now. I feel easier when I'm, you know, without it.
Oh, you can't do it. You got to live with a tape recorder. I mean, you can't do it unless you live with it, certainly.
Yeah.
Any more than you can write the way you write without living around it. You sure can. No.
And of course, in Miss Daisy's case, with me, it would be in anybody. I can't do it. But in Miss Daisy's case, she'll say, "Where is Miss Miles?" Because she always talks to you. And out there, when I was talking with her, but when we came up, she said, "Now, where's Mr. Miles?" And I think she depends on that.
Well, I tell you, when she hits her stride, it's mighty. It's one of the most gifted things I've ever seen.
That was just as beautiful as anything I ever heard.
You see, what it is, Suzanne, my assumption is, you see, that this whole thing, you see, you're taking for granted, you or anyone else. I've lived in the fiction, you see, all my life, and I don't see anything in fiction to compare with this. What the whole assumption that you have to have when you work with this is, now she can't go back and pick up this about Preacher Taylor unless she's had the experience. That means to say, all her life she has had experience. She has been Ratliff with a thesis on her mind all her life. So in a way, this is going too far, but in a way, you see, it's a mental life that she has lived. It's not, you see, for raw experience, but she looked. And I don't believe you can get any farther than that. I can't do it because I didn't look at Preacher Taylor when I was growing up or when I was that age.
No.
I've just barely learned to do it now.
That's what disturbs me, because they do it, and I mean, you can't. Barbara knows she's doing it. I mean, when she's working with you, like, you know. Well, she could bring it into knowing that she was doing it.
Well, she also had the experience.
Yeah, and she has experience, and
she's
scholarly
enough to know it.
Yeah, but like Miss Daisy,
yeah.
She does it, but I don't know exactly how you explain it. She does it, but she doesn't know she's doing it.
No.
I mean, not in the sense that you know what
no.
she's doing.
Now, that's what Whitman had in mind, you see, that they had to grow out of institutions. They didn't have a critical superstructure. That's in Whitman.
Mm.
He thought at first, you know, he could write poetry for Miss Daisy and people like that, the countryside. And then he had that awful awakening. He couldn't go. Then he saw all their gifts, a lot of their gifts, you see. But they weren't conscious gifts, except these skills. But you see, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about mental skills.
No skills.
Yeah.
Well, say with you and Nell. Now, if they have the gift, and I don't think it's not like Miss Daisy, I don't think. Because it's too diffused. It's just kind of just scattered off through everything. But if you were to tell them what they're doing, they wouldn't do it. I mean,
it would
cut it off, I think.
No. Now, that's what I found. I found that a hard way. You see, I taped Miss Anna for a year or so. And after she died, I took one of her tapes over there. And they started saying this wasn't right. And this fella won't appreciate it if she calls him a person in legislature who influences the people. If you call him people that are paid to influence
the
legislature.
Yeah.
And that's all they could get. And they never commented on it. I never had any idea that they had read it or listened to it.
They might say it sounds like it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's about their comment.
So the whole family, you see, is gone. I didn't realize that. I thought they'd all want copies of all the tapes I had. So I learned it the hard way. Jolted. And I found it out, the people farther along. And now Ms. Richardson, Flo Richardson, you see. It's but in general, it's cruel to make people talk to a tape. It's cruelty. You're not tricking them by hiding the tape. You just get it out of sight where they're not overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
I can't talk to one either. I ought to be able to, you see. I mean, I can do it in a deliberate way.
See, you don't try. I mean, it's not that, like Thoreau says, you know, wake his neighbors up, but you don't want to wake them up.
You don't want to.
You just want to leave them the way they are.
That's it. That's it. So you see, after you talk about tapes a little bit down at the Cape, the whole thing's out.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened.
They
that's why you wouldn't stay.
They won't come
partly.
Close to a tape or anybody who does tape.
Yeah.
That's the reason I don't let anybody play these tapes to anybody.
Yeah. Well, I scotched that before I even realized I was doing it.
Yeah.
Because you felt that here was good?
Well, I just talk about what you... try to talk, you know, what we do here, report. Well, that doesn't last long because Jim or somebody will walk through and says, if she's boring you, you can just shut her up. Just joking.
Yeah.
But,
well, that's right. That's your attitude. No. And you see, you have some tolerance for it, but a limited tolerance. And look how far you've had to go along to get what tolerance you have of it.
Yeah.
Now you take the Daisy tapes thing. I don't know, but I have a feeling there's more insight into a colored person in those tapes in there than exists anywhere else in the world.
In all the literature.
You've got literature on them, but nobody has looked at them. It's all theoretical, you see, and black boy. And all that sort of stuff mixed up with fiction where you don't know what you're talking about. Now, that's an overstatement, but you won't have that. And you see, a great deal of the writing on the colored people will be autobiographical.
Yeah, a lot of it.
And that won't be right. That'll be reacting to things.
That's right.
And on top of that, the ones that do that are the... Oh, well, I won't say that. I guess it's not right. I was thinking the ones that have sort of been, you know, in the urban city part, which is different from this.
Yeah. But the urban part ought to yield to the same sort of tone.
Yeah.
Same sort of method. That's what I tried to say last year. You was what they see in Ms. Rawlings and do their own members and find out a little bit about their own community.
And of course the thing of the tape too, as I can see, you've got the voice. And just on hearing there's a little bit of the voice of Miss Daisy, you see David reacts there and says that can speak just the quality of the voice that you don't get in fiction.
That's right.
And he, you know, every time he sees me, he says, those tapes with that voice, he thinks in terms of, well, how, you know, you can sell them for any amount of money, because it's just not, that's, you see, but that's how much power that voice has.
Yeah, that's a beautiful voice.
In addition to the looking at it. But this was, to me, the clearest case of just what holding a subject open could do. She rose to that with a kind of vengeance almost. You held that thing open for her. See, the thing about it is, it takes a gear, Suzanne, that Guy has and that I don't get into. It takes that gear. It's the same thing exactly that I have to get into in order to see a student through, now I have to say this because that's my experience, through a recital. I simply have to magic that student through. And you do the same thing when you're bringing out a tape. You can call it direction or whatever you want to do. It's a kind of thing you've got to see and sift and make her arise. I never saw her use her voice any better. And when that came out, we called him Bear. And when you could see her mind picking up a case against her will. And I have stood in the wings. Now, I'm talking now. I have stood in the wings and willed passages to come out of a piece of music. I have willed it. And you can't tell me it isn't magic. And the student has come. I did the same. I did it for Alan in that Schumann. And he came back and he said, I played better than I can play. And I didn't say yes because I made you. But for every case like that, for every inlay, there's got to be a venue. But it's genius, and I don't know that you can, Suzanne may be able to do it. But this was the clearest thing this morning of our bungling and just fiddling and being lethargic and thinking she might come around to it. And thinking we were doing something,
yeah,
like most people do. They think they're getting somewhere, and they're not. And you come in, and we brought her back, and then with that incisiveness that you had, it's exactly like you cleared the air and made her sharpen her phrases and magicked her into that thing. And you, it's genius.
That's it. We sit there and think she's going to do it all by herself. And she won't. She's got to have something.
It's the same thing in when Bergman directs a movie. It's when you create on your feet and play it. But when you start expecting me to do it the same way, then we get in trouble. I got to go get her and keep her easy and keep her coming up here and keep her liking to come up here. That's my key. And appreciating what you do, and I think Susan can see that. That's the clearest thing I ever saw.
Well, my terminology would be a little different. I found if I put her around, I don't mind doing it. They won't let me alone. They won't say nothing. They want to say, you sit down. Well, somebody got to get a drink of water. Somebody got to put the tape on. I don't mind doing it. But I have to have somebody to release me to where I can have some freedom of movement.
Sure.
And even so, you see, people like I deal with, some of them, not all of them. Phil never did. Mr. Weaver doesn't. Shirley doesn't. Ms. Guthrie is extraordinarily suspicious. She's the most suspicious person I've ever dealt with, you see. She has the gift, but it's very difficult to get to,
mm-hmm,
on account of the smallness of her intellect. She doesn't know how what a small mind she has. It's inconceivable to her. You see, but she has all those gifts. But it's very hard to get to her. Well, let me tell you. just somebody to work with, sort of distract them, you know, is all. Now, the other, you see, my whole life is the mental background for it. Everything I've done leads up to this, so it's not a simple thing. But it's the categories. Once you see that Ms. Guthrie has had all that legal trouble living out in the woods, that's just ready made. All you do And you don't have to develop it. It'll develop itself if you just let it, you know. They'll develop it. They're interested in it. It's after all. But what I see more than anything else is just the ability to to project and live the experience. That's it. That's the only thing I see. And all my life I've done that. I've done it to such an extent that in a manner I haven't had much experience myself. But I can project and relive it. Now, you see, she can't keep out of the pitfalls, the illnesses, infirmities. But it doesn't take much to keep away from that, you see. I'll tell you, what I notice here, to me, this sort of talk is more natural than the chatter. And the talk that is so low-key, where people go around just flimsy, you know, just hardly able to shake hands with you.
But even Miss Daisy can take just so much of this kind of talk. She doesn't have to go down there and see Ben. It tires the mind.
The mind gets stronger as it goes along. But the you see, this sort of talk you don't see except in this sort of talk. Now, I don't know that, but mine doesn't see unless it's in gear. I think that's what you see in talk now, in Radley. That Faulkner keeps saying, you know, he has that comic mask. You can call it anything you want to. But that enables him to get through all the small talk. The assumption has to be see, I've heard these natural, uncultivated people phrase that as one of the first. He created a West Tennessee a gallery of portraits just like Barbara's Stratford at one time in his life until the family knocked it out of him. He had no audience. He did it on his own. I certainly had no audience for him at that time. I couldn't listen. But he did it. Now, Miss Daisy, you see, you've got her at the right time. She will create all these portraits. She's got 2 dozen in there. It's right simple. It's a little hard, sir. You see the critical side of it. you can't tell them what it is. You have to get around it. Now Lloyd is large. He's brought up his own children, and they're all respected people. And his wife's sisters and brothers, he brought them up and married them off here around. And she can't say it. She can't look at Lloyd in his prime. There's no way I've found to cut into that. Now you say you'd think she doesn't know Francis Presley. Now that's clear. That's ridiculous. There's no sense in that. As much as she's lived with Francis Presley, as much as they've talked. She treats Lloyd the same way. except she'll go into considerable detail about somebody dressing Lloyd down and exposing him, but she can't build him up. And I think that's part of it. Everett, it's easier for Everett to tear Willie down than it is to look at him. Now Everett, you see, was a member of that family for years and years and years. And he can't take them in their prime and present them. And Frankie has treated Everett the same way. But there has to be, you see, you live with that. And there has to be some way that you get around it. There's some way to get around it. I see Preacher Taylor has never been brought to life the way he was this morning.
Never.
He can't even see himself in that light.
No. Don't expect so.
He can't even report on himself in that way.
And so she would never have done it if you hadn't have held her open.
Yeah, you've got to provide, actually what you're doing, you see, Keats and Emily Dickinson had that extra gift of insight and the extra gift of finding an artistic vehicle. And what you're doing is
giving them, that's right.
Giving them the vehicle.
The artistic vehicle.
Yeah, good. Now, one way is to boast. See, you can cut them off from boasting. Everybody else tried it and couldn't do it. You see, a good part of what Cookie does is demonstration. He thinks in those terms. Now, partly because he's small and has always been poor, and it made him cocky, and he doesn't really know much.
No.
But you can allow him that. And watch him make something out of it. So, you've got one little scene of Frances at the end.
Yes.
You see, she had brought up that before about Willie Wells, but she had never got into it.
Mm-hmm.
Right out here. And she didn't say that Frances and Dora Mitchell were there.
No, she didn't. She had said she would pick beans out there.
And paid her with a check.
Right.
Yeah. And Lorna Smith, Mr. Lorna Smith, at the store there. And she gave such a nice light, Lorna Smith, such a nice light. No, she said she'd never seen him work. Pick up a hole. He'd come by and ask them what they were doing and tell them not to get too hot. They wouldn't see him anymore until late in the day. He'd come back by and ask them how they'd get along. And Miss Agnes, Miss Agnes never came out and see him. If she wanted vegetables to cook, she'd send somebody out there with a bucket to pick them. Now that's the sort of farmers they are. So what you do through her, in her eyes, I found out more about them than I dreamed of. You see, you've got an aristocracy. Standing.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be bred into all their children. Now, Mr. Gilbert. Ms. Gilbert said she'd always done her work. But Ms. Patterson had always had hers done. And Ms. Patterson was right, condescending around Mr. Gilbert and Mr. Gilbert.
Yes.
They were neighborly, but they didn't speak the same language. So You see, in Milton, as Milton says, as Satan says, in hell you have gradation. Even in hell. But you don't see these things outside your tape. You've got no chance, you see, of getting the focus and the concentration and the use of the faculties anywhere else. Now you say, I ought to have one of these things out there. I couldn't do it out there. I could make a raw tape, rough tape. But that doesn't exclude enough. In here, seemingly, in some cases at any rate, you have cut out all the present to where they can see the surroundings, to where they can see, and the distractions, to where they can use the factors.
And almost one person has to hold it open. It's too easy, and it's a beautiful thing to see the direction take shape and to see the way it's going. And I could put in a word that would just throw the whole thing out, just a word, and get the attention to what I say.
Well, you don't want to feel, you know, you don't want to feel like you can say whatever you
sure,
want to say.
Yeah, but you've got to be...
I don't know how it feels. I've never been with
that's
anyone
right.
else who's carrying the ball.
All right.
But what I feel is that it would be so fascinating just to see the direction, you don't need to say anything.
That's right. You don't. And I think that's why we don't.
You can say things. I mean...
You know, every once in a while you say yes, you know, or did she, or something like that. And that's about all you need to do when somebody has something going. And as you say, then if there's a transition and you want to try something, okay. But
well, now on the other hand, Faye, Suzanne did well with Mr. Weaver over at his house, just taking it as it came. That is, with the interesting patches and the uninteresting patches, and the same thing at Ms. Guthrie's.
Sure.
But now, Suzanne, I don't know. See, that doesn't come within what I said. Now, what one thing I've learned to do, you see, you just don't make a tape just cold. You see, that you build up to it, and you talk on the outside. And I heard a telephone conversation that started me out on one of the finest ones Miss Daisy made. I also had a telephone conversation on one that didn't lead anywhere. The superintendent of the Sunday school was complaining about building her new church building being too small. But she didn't rise to that. But anyhow, that was, what would you call it? That was something to work with. Well, you have to have a number of those things in your mind. And I set them down on a piece of paper. I've got so I won't forget them. And if my mind goes blank, I can just look at this, you know, just have it here. And it helps me. but now, see, there's so much I don't know about it. I just know a little about it. But now, your reporting on that day morning with Ms. Guthrie, I see her through your reporting. Now, you don't quite have it in focus. You don't have the direction of it. You have to work it over just a little bit more yourself.
Yeah.
What you might say, now I don't know this, you see. What in a way, what you've got there is the raw material of the tape. Raw material of the it's not quite in focus. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can get it. The cases don't come to mind. But I think you have to do that. That's part of it. So it's not just creating something out of nothing or on the spur of the moment.
The thing that's most foreign to someone who isn't a scholar is a sustained over a period of time, that you don't dip into something and then dip out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is one thing, Suzanne, that God doesn't care where you go and what you do, you know, or what I do or anybody else. It's just He would like to see a sustained thing in anybody. And He can do it, you see. They used to kid us about it. He'd go to the Library of Congress and I wouldn't see him. He'd be in his cell, you see, or somewhere else, or at the Bodleian or wherever it is. But he knows how to sustain a thought, and that's scholarly. And this is what you proposed to do this summer, to see if you could.
Yeah, but you know what happens? To me, you get Miss Guthrie and Mr. Weaver and the Hague and Coco and Barbara's tapes. And what do I cut out to sustain with one of them? And then I end up with Archie Carr and just realize that he can look at one of those stupid egrets out there and just go off, you know, just look at him, and that takes him off into things I'd never even dreamed. Just to look at something. And instead of just look at it and say, well, that's nice. They eat at grasshoppers. He looks at the egret and it eats. Grasshopper's all right, but it also eat next to a drag line, and it probably ate next to a mammoth elephant billions of years ago.
But this is all.
Yeah,
there we
go.
Okay.
And you know, I just what happened? I spent all Monday reading that book of his in your hand, the one on Africa. Just absolutely astounded, because. I guess it's not exactly like Miss Daisy does, in a way it is. You know, he looks at things and then he reports, you know, and it's clear, and it's, and I can see. I think what it is, I may have read that book a year or so ago, and read it and thought, well, all the information is nice, you know, and just like the information, be able to talk about kung fu flies and all. But what I could see reading it Monday was what he was doing with his mind. I mean, just he saw some buffbacks eating besides cattle in Africa, and that takes him to Plains Prairie. And in the 30s, the egrets left the marshes to eat with the cattle, and then the buffbacks in Africa migrate over to the United States to eat with the cattle here. It just, to me, for a man or anybody to follow an idea out like that, it's just, you know, they just don't do it. Even Jim, who's, you know, interested in wildlife, or was, he doesn't do that. You know, he might pick up a few facts about wildlife, but he wouldn't sit there and look at a spider pulling up a worm and watch what that spider's doing and be able to say what the spider did and kind of what was going on. So I know reading Archie Carr.
Well, now is that the gift Miss Daisy has, and somehow or other a sort of miracle he has preserved it in spite of all the academic world he's lived in?
It seems like it to me that he was talking mostly. Well, there were some sketches of people in there, but when he sat down to try to talk about their guide, you know, just specifically their guide, Wilson, he didn't do it. It didn't come across. We didn't see their guide. But in another case, he talked about some big, you know, I guess he was some sort of rancher and hunted elephants and stuff. He came across. And Miss Daisy, of course, Archie Carr, you know, he looks at it as a naturalist, and Miss Daisy might, you know, watch that spider or something, but she wouldn't go back into these things about why the spider does that, I don't think. Whereas Archie Carr, he looks at it and he asks why. You know, it's not just what's it doing, but why is it doing it? I haven't heard Miss Daisy enough, but I think that maybe that's just a little further step on than what she does. But I don't know if she asks why things, you know, the things she sees, she asks why they do it. But that just was amazing me to read a whole book of his, you know, and he's been in the college for 30 or 40 years, I guess, or longer. I guess he's still there. I didn't even know that till Jim just happened to mention that he'd seen a presentation on monitor lizards, and Archie Carr was involved in it. And I said, Archie Carr, the guy who wrote the Black Page? And he said, yeah, he's at the University of Florida. I didn't know that. He's sitting on his doorstep.
You know, the only time I ever saw him was in Los Angeles. He lectured the freshman one term.
Mm-hmm.
He said the same thing, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 times, and I heard him a couple of times. He's a graduate professor, a research professor, so he doesn't get out much. Well, yes.
But this is all the Barbara Page.
But, yeah.
It's just a matter of working it in.
But now, yes, you say that's too, you, that's pretty rich. All those things you mentioned, Mr. Whelan, Ms. Gussie, and Archie Carr, and these others all at one time. Yes, that's right. But you see, I felt that in the last year or so. Once I kind of see how to get into these things, I see so much, I'm overwhelmed. I can hardly set up. There's just so much to see. And I never saw it before. Things I've never seen before.
And I don't believe you could work on the Barbara tape without being able to see these other things.
Yeah,
then you can see what's in them, or why you're doing it. If you could do that, you could take the barber tapes to Timbuktu and work on them. And visit every night with somebody else. But I don't think it's possible.
I don't know the answer, so. But I have thought for a long time that at any time of the year, half the day ought to be at your typewriter. That still leaves you a lot of loose ends where you can knock around and have a coke with somebody and not say anything important.
Have a coke with Carol Ann, I end up reporting because they're a perfect audience.
Is that right?
Oh yeah, for me anyway. Because I have, well, I, you know, I just kind of doctor things a little bit. And Ann, you know, she just sits there and she just can't believe all this goes on. And in a way, it's just perfectly ordinary things like the hay, but to talk to her about it, she's never done it or had anybody talk to her about it or anything like that. And she likes the way I talk about it, so I just perform for her. And she does for me sometimes.
I don't believe you'd ever have Marlo without an audience. Don't you know, that I read that article about Virginia Woolf. And she said the one function the literature courses served is, it didn't necessarily make the writers, but they made the good readers. And you couldn't have writers without good readers. You've got to have an audience. Ms. Daisy can't talk without an audience.
Mm-hmm.
What she says to Ben won't be worth hearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Except what she used to say to Ben. You see, I have a beautiful tape of Ben's. Have you ever heard that?
Mm-hmm.
It is lyric and just as much insight and a lighter touch than anything Ms. Daisy has done.
One of those beautiful tapes you've got.
Yeah. And he was so far gone then that his voice was almost a whisper. His vitality was so low. It's an amazing thing. You'd hardly believe it's possible.
He was just as dapper.
Yeah. And he hardly had enough energy to talk. Hello. His voice was never really clear. Kind of that rattle. And that's been several years ago. So, you see.
Well, I could see that in Coco this weekend. I guess because I was looking for it. You know, what kind of audience there is down there. And there's not any. The times we've there's just too many people. And they all have something to say, and they won't listen to anybody else. And it just, you know, just jumps. It's real quick, just one thing to another. And the only approach you get to giving somebody a chance to talk is in the kitchen, with Neff. And even then, there was Barbara there too, and sometimes Faye, and then the grandmother came, and it just shoots things.
Even in the kitchen.
Where normally, you know, in the kitchen it's pretty quiet. It's just Nell and myself.
Yeah.
And I can let her go on. But I have to watch myself real closely because I'll start talking to her just like I talk to my mother. And, you know, it's just a back and forth conversation. And it's not, I'm not listening to her.
Well, most talk would just be like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, this other is just exceptional. Yeah, they can all, but you look at all that talk that goes to waste. And they don't really, and it's sad. All that marvelous experience that they can report on.
You see, Miss Daisy doesn't. It's beyond her to know, and I should have known this, to feel that she has any responsibility to bring anybody to life for the younger generation or anybody else.
Yeah.
She just doesn't think of it.
No, that's beyond her. That it's unless she talks about Francis Percy will never live. See, that's beyond it. Now, she will agree with you.
Well, old people have always seen, you see, that old people need to be recalled. It's not the old people need to be recalled, but they need, in their prime, the young should somehow have access to them. I'm not saying it really.
This is one thing that Margaret.
That's always been.
Yeah, this is one thing that Margaret seems to be conscious of. It's a pity, she says, that the grandchildren don't listen to Mama talk.
Yeah.
And she repeats that.
Yeah.
Mama has so much to say.
Yeah.
And they ought to listen. And they all do, except Willie, Brother Willie's children. Now that's the feeling.
Well, now, say, they have all performed for Suzanne. And now that's something entirely new. Mr. Weaver came over here. He's always in her to leave. And he said, yeah, it wore me out. And Miss Gussie, I sat out on the porch with her. And it got so, the subject dropped.
It got painful.
Yes. Oh, it was painful.
Well, remember that time we took those three students over there and in the yard?
Yeah.
While she rose.
That's right. That's right. She'd never seen him before and she couldn't see him then. It was in the twilight dusk.
You've never seen such a performance.
Yeah. She just performed. Yes. Well,
and Miss Daisy did the last time she was over here that Suzanne dropped in.
Yes, on J.R.
On J.R. It was, she was talking to you.
Yeah, she's telling you about that. And that's the finest thing on J.R. we've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought there'd be, I wasn't fishing for that. I just brought up J.R. just a bring up something.
There are tapes of Miss Daisy where all we had to, all that I had to do was just simply to sit there and listen. There are a few where,
yeah,
I think you must have said a dozen words throughout an hour and a half.
That's right. But that's some of the better performers. Fell was like that, Miss Hannah. And I don't know, Roberts is like that, except I don't have tapes for Roberts. Now you see, Suzanne is getting a hold of this now. You know, she's to where she can make something of it. And you see, you can't get to let the time, you know, you can't watch the clock. I mean, it's not quite right. You know, in the light of what she's doing now, Fee, it seems to me like that the most condescending person, the thing a person can do is write a thesis. You see, anybody can do that.
Barbara can do that.
That's it. You just put in so much time, and that is. And if they don't like it, you do it over again. And it's not vicious prose, you see. And they don't want it if it's good prose. It's not based on a view of the world. It's just based on a certain thesis cast through a certain amount of dead material. No people involved. So.
It's the difference. It's attitude rather than just the.
Yeah.
Barbara says she spent a thesis, a dissertation, and now a book on one idea. And she never left it. I mean, that's all it is. And she realized
now,
that she says,
you know,
nobody ever read it.
Yes, that's nice. Now, what I kept thinking while they were down there, I worried about it really. In a subconscious way, is that Suzanne would do the talking to Barbara. And you see, in this sort of thing, you don't. You project.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not fair just to listen all the time, but you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
So that what you say doesn't stop what they say. I don't know what it is, but you have,
yeah,
I have to,
yeah,
be careful.
You just have to watch.
Now that's the artistic side of it. I mean, that's part of it. Manipulation is a part of all of it.
Sure it is.
A certain amount of it, even raising children, you see. That's a part of it. And the last thing you want to do is to say, well, now I'm getting all this out of Barbara or somebody else, but I'm not giving anything. You want to give it, but you don't want to give it. You got to be
careful.
You don't want to set her straight on Emerson.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be awful? Of course, I think Suzanne would have too much of his native caution and tact to do that. Wouldn't that be awful? Now my professor, he don't believe that. Isn't that awful? Isn't that awful?
Well, Suzanne's way past that.
Oh, yes. There's the red-bellied family up there.
Well, hello. You got all your children.
There's parents and one child.
Yeah, it just makes a lot of fuss.
And he really follows them around, doesn't he? And they're a little short of sight. You know what we'd better do? We'd better go back there and see if we, and walk around and see if we can find any trace of that calf.
Well, I think we had it.
I think the calf is missing.
Well, I'm pretty sure the calf is missing. That's a great understatement.
The mother thinks it's missing.
She said it didn't take up with any of that this morning.
No.
You all know which calf belongs to which mother, don't you?
I thought I knew. His little heifer calf looked just like her.
Well, I believe there are 13 calves out there, and it's just 12. But we lost count on how many calves it's supposed to be.
I thought I...
Let me see. You had two that didn't have calves.
Three.
Three that didn't have calves?
Yeah.
And one that lost one.
Yeah.
And then four, then two of the heifers.
Two of the heifers.
So there's two. There's six. And six from 19 leaves 13.
You get mixed up in all those figures.